Sue-Ann, why aren't you just doing the show from the pool? That would be much more fun.
In the pool with my bathing suit on?
Well, I, you know, it might be good for donations.
Oh, I don't know. I think it'd scare people away, despite the weight loss.
I don't know, Harrison, what do you think?
Just making the audience jealous down in Florida, it looks like.
Yeah, it certainly does that. All right, let's get this started. Welcome to Off the Record. This is True North's newest show where we all shed our inhibitions and pretenses and let loose. We both cut and let loose on the stories of the week, some of which we've talked about on our show and have reported on, but we do it in a more casual and informal way, and we have tried to have, anyway, some fun in the process. We've had great feedback on this so far, so hopefully we'll get to some of your responses as the show progresses. Last time we forgot, and this time I might forget too, because I just remembered now. So we do eventually want to read your comments on this. Anyway, joined by Harrison Faulkner, host of Ratioed and The Faulkner Show, and also Sue-Ann Levy. Great to have you both on. How are the weeks? I'll start with you, Sue-Ann, because your week will just make Harrison and I jealous because we're in Ontario weather right now.
It's been wonderful. Actually, the weather has improved tremendously after 2 months of pretty kakapuku poo-poo weather, you know, clouds and rain. So it's really nice to see. And I went to the beach yesterday.
Harrison, you didn't go to the beach yesterday, did you?
No, I'm afraid not. The Cherry Beach down in Toronto doesn't sound as appealing as a Florida beach right now. The week was all right, but it was a little strange. Like, we had some, we passed a grim mark with the church burnings. We had some very strange interactions with journalists. We'll go through all that on the show. But, you know, it was just another week in Trudeau's Canada, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough. Just on the beaches in Toronto, very, very misleading. Because I used to work, when I worked in radio, I worked at Chorus Key, which is on the waterfront. And I was told, oh, you'll be right next to Sugar Beach. And I'm like, oh, a beach? That seems like a weird place for a beach. And then you look out the window and it's just like this fake, like, I don't know, like 200 square feet of sand in between a sugar factory and a radio station. And I'm like, this is not what a beach is. I want the Sue-Ann type of beach. But
there are pink umbrellas on that beach, aren't there, Andrew?
You can put umbrellas up. That doesn't make it like plus 30 degrees and salt water. It's like, I don't even know if you can go in the water there. I think it's like just like an overlay. I just don't get it. I just don't get what Sugar Beach is supposed to be. That's it. If you're from Alberta, you're like, what the hell are they talking about? So let's talk about something that can unite us all, which is the spectacle that is Pierre Poilievre versus the media. This has become a dog bites man type of story. There are just so many instances of Pierre Poilievre and journalists scrapping. The most recent one, I talked about it a bit on my show, was him with a Canadian press reporter on, well, just take a look.
Why did your party want to grant over $100 million in regulatory relief to the mainstream media?
We don't want to give any tax dollars to the mainstream media. Our belief is that the mainstream media and all...
Your party's decision to grant regulatory relief?
So I'll answer your question. The media that is bought and paid for, which, where are you from, by the way?
Which outlet are you in? Which outlet? Which outlet?
Canadian Press.
Ah, okay. Canadian Press. So you're talking about tax dollars for media. Isn't CBC your biggest? I can answer.
I asked regulatory.
Yeah. Do you want an answer?
Party want to grant $100 million in regulatory relief to the mainstream media?
When would you like me to respond? Okay. Good. Okay, great. So, of course, you are a tax-funded media outlet and spreading Justin Trudeau's message.
Why did you
and so you're interrupting me again.
Well,
you're interrupting me again.
Why
I am answering the question.
Do you regret granting $100 million in regulatory relief to the mainstream media?
Your question is false. So if you can allow me to correct your falsehoods, then we can answer the question directly. So, false. Canadian conservatives do not believe in giving tax dollars to media outlets. That's Justin Trudeau. Okay, if you don't want me to answer the question, I'll move on to someone else. You're a tax-funded mouthpiece to the PMO. That's the reality. So
question answered. You committed.
I'm trying to, but you're heckling. Are you going to let me answer the question, or are you just going to heckle on behalf of Justin Trudeau?
Of course,
which is it?
I would love the answer.
Great. So our party does not support tax dollars for media outlets, because that's when we end up with biased media like you, who come here and articulate the PMO talking points rather than delivering real news to the Canadian people. Justin Trudeau gave Bell Media and other media tax dollars supposedly to protect media jobs. And then what happened? They all got laid off. So that the supposed justification for giving Bell all this money was that it was going to save media jobs. Well, they all got fired. So I guess that wasn't the real reason for giving tax dollars to the media. The real reason was for him to buy support from the media, which is what it actually did. So we believe that media should be driven by readership, viewership, and listenership. And that's what allows it to represent the Canadian people rather than taking marching orders from the PMO. Okay.
All right, on a scale of cringe to stick it into my veins, where are you on those sorts of exchanges, Harrison?
I'm all for it at this point. I really am. I have to say that the conservative base was crying out for someone to finally address the legacy media this way, and we've got it. You know, not everybody is satisfied with Pierre Poilievre so far, but I think it'd be tough for many conservatives in this country to say that they don't enjoy seeing the Canadian press and CBC get treated this way when they ask ridiculous questions like that. So I think, you know what, I'm all for it. I think it's well past time that some of the legacy media press in this country got a taste of their own medicine and were treated with the kind of respect that they themselves deserve, which is not a lot.
Yeah, Sue-Ann, you've been a political candidate in the past. You've also been, for much more of your life, a journalist. How do you look at those sorts of exchanges?
Delicious. They're absolutely delicious. Love them. I spent 20 years at City Hall in Toronto, and I was the lone person out asking tough questions. And I always got put down by the person I was asking the questions of, particularly the mayors. And everybody else would laugh and find it quite funny. And it's nice to see the shoe on the other foot. And the thing that really, really makes me happy and find it delicious is that Pierre is so cool about it. He doesn't get ruffled in the slightest. He has a great technique. And it's about time, as Harrison said, that these people were called out, because I find it despicable.
So you don't take the Pascal Saint-Ange view. I infer from your answer that this is an attack on democracy. She really said this. Take a look.
I just want to get back on the altercation between Pierre Poilievre yesterday and a journalist from Canadian Press. First of all, I want to say that he's pretty thin-skinned. It's our job when we're politicians to answer questions from journalists. We're accountable to the Canadian population, and it's the journalist's job to ask those questions. Some questions are difficult, some questions are easy. Yesterday's question was pretty easy. He was just asked to explain why his party introduced an amendment to lift fees for Canadian broadcasters. It's a pretty easy question. It's his party that brought that forward. So yes, when you're a politician, you need to answer questions. And when you're attacking the press, when you're attacking our free press, you're also attacking democracy. It's unworthy of a leader.
Now, I should just say, I've never interviewed Minister Saint-Ange. My one attempt at doing so, it was a couple of months ago. She was leaving question period. It was around the time that there was a big kerfuffle about C-18 and the Facebook news ban and all of that. And I had one question, and she got into the back of her limo so quickly and passed me off to a staffer who said to text him, and I did, and I never heard a response. So this whole, oh, we are there to answer questions. Yeah, a load of crap. So Harrison, attack on democracy, what do you think?
Well, it's a lot easier to answer questions from the media when you pay them off to write soft articles about you. It's a whole different story when you're the opposition to the government that's stuffing the pockets of the media. You know, I should also say that journalists and the politicians are supposed to have a combative relationship. They're not supposed to be patting each other on the back. They're not supposed to be, you know, treating each other with kid gloves. A sign of a good democracy is when the journalists fight back against the politicians, and the politicians have a right to dish it back as good as they receive it. So again, this is just completely ridiculous. And one more thing, giving them money, giving media the taxpayer dollars is a lot different than lifting taxes on broadcasters. And anyone who pretends as though that's the same is obviously just trying to confuse the public and push political talking points.
Yeah, what's your read on that, Sue Ann?
Well, I think, you know, she is a giant hypocrite. I mean, all we have to do is look at some of the tape. I mean, the proof is in the pudding, in the tape, of Krista Freeland, for example, calling security and roughing up one of our colleagues from Rebel Media, Dave Menzies. I mean, Dave is a character, and sometimes he asks for it, but in this case, he didn't. He asked a hard question. You know, it's really, really quite hypocritical to hear her talk that way, because I don't know about you guys, but I was muted, banned on Twitter, blocked, you name it, by politicians who didn't want to answer my hard questions. So it's kind of rich to hear her talk that way.
Yeah, and also let's not forget Justin Trudeau is the guy who will, you know, say, oh, the Globe and Mail story is false, the guy who bans media he doesn't like from being there. Right. So it's not even like they're living up to this lofty aspirational goal that they're setting out for others of, oh, we'll take all questions whether we like them or not.
Yeah.
They never do. They never do. They cherry pick, and most politicians do that. They cherry pick the ones that are from the friendly media. The amount of softballs that I, during my career, heard other media lob at various and sundry politicians was appalling. I mean, nobody ever really got, you know, many, many sides of the story or the hard side of the story. So, I mean, listening to her, the big difference, Harrison and Andrew, is that now we've got somebody who's actually fighting back, and it's about time.
Yeah, and it flips the script. Like, the next election, because we're used to seeing the whole, like, deferential thing that Aaron O'Toole and Andrew Scheer did. So we will keep an eye out for that. This is a story that really was quite shocking, and I want to get both of you to weigh in on this. But let's play the video, and just to set the stage for it here, this is a very heated demonstration that was taking place outside a Richmond City Council meeting in British Columbia. The discussion was about a proposed supervised injection site, a so-called safe drug, by my quote, so I need to like bring in more, a so-called safe injection site in Richmond, which people in the suburban community clearly didn't like, hence them coming out to be heard and be heard before city council. But then this happened. I've lived here my whole life. Go back where you came from. You're not a Canadian. This is what this nice white BC progressive woman is yelling at this Chinese man, concerned about his community. Now, when did go back where you came from become a progressive slur? Because I was always told this was what, you know, the evil, scary right-wingers say, not the nice, virtuous lefties.
Yeah, well, we heard that from the people who are protesting the Freedom Convoy as well, didn't we? It is becoming one of those new progressive slurs against those who they disagree with, how the tables turn, I guess. But notice what that woman says there. You know, this is not Canada. Apparently, she thinks Canada is supposed to be a country where every city is infested with drug addicts and with the destruction that comes with it. I guess that's what she wants for Canada. And anyone who disagrees with that must go back to where they come from. Well, I'm come from Canada, and I don't want to see my city, although it already has been in Toronto, turned into a drug-infested wasteland. But it's just completely ridiculous. But again, what you're seeing is sort of the crumbling of the left here, falling into the traps that they set for their opponents.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I don't know this man who was in that, and I feel bad he was subjected to that. But oftentimes, I've always said, immigrants have a much more idealized version of what Canada is and should be than many people who were born here, because they chose to be here. They chose to come here. And this guy then sees people overrunning his community with these policies, which are magnets for crime. You've covered these sites, Suanne. Like, so who is more Canadian, the Asian man that says, I don't want this in my neighborhood, or the progressive woman screaming at him?
Well, obviously the Asian man. You know, all they have to do, all these people, is walk to in Vancouver, the east side of town, downtown Vancouver, and see what a safe injection site has produced. I mean, it's a drug addict wasteland. I was there last year, and it actually made me physically ill to see the way these people are living and allowed to live on the street, you know, in their fentanyl poses, in, you know, in their urine, on their urine-soaked sidewalks. I mean, I've said this repeatedly, and then it came to Toronto, and people are seeing how these sites destroy communities. And frankly, I've been against them for over 10 years, maybe 15, when Vancouver first started. But frankly, they don't help drug addicts. They just enable their drug addictions. And all the arguments that were used initially to bring them in, I don't think hold muster anymore, because there's still opioid deaths, and they can't argue that these things are helping at all. All they're doing is destroying the fabrics of communities. Go to downtown Toronto and you'll see drug addicts lying on the street.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing here. I mean, when was Insight in Vancouver, which was sort of the first one? That has to be, what, 15 years ago now that came up? And anyone can look at British Columbia and Vancouver specifically and see clearly none of this has helped. I mean, the situation has gotten exponentially worse. So at best, it's made no difference at all. And at worst, it's inflamed this. But that's the part that's missing, is that more of the same is not going to yield a different result. So the fact that there's was such anger in that video, is so insane, Harrison.
Yeah, and the reality is it hasn't worked at all. It is not saving lives. These are political talking points, political dogma running up against a brick wall, which happens to be the truth. You know, British Columbia set the highest annual death toll for opioid overdoses just last year. And this, as you said, has been going on for years now. It's the leading cause of death in British Columbia for youth aged 10 to 18, opioid overdose. And now the BC government is considering providing safe fentanyl to children? I mean, anyone who thinks that this is saving lives, as the addictions and mental health minister at the federal level will constantly repeat, or as British Columbia officials themselves will repeat, is running at extreme odds with the truth. And they're just, they have their eyes shut. They don't want to address the fact that this is making life worse. It's ruining communities and it's ruining lives. It's killing people.
Yeah. And let's not forget the shooting last summer of that poor innocent woman right near a safe injection site in Riverdale in Toronto. And the community was in an uproar, and the people who run the site and the health minister, deputy minister, they were downright cavalier about the crime that is occurring around these sites. Drug dealers know that they're a target. I actually saw drug dealing in action because I've spent a lot of time outside some of these sites or around these sites. I mean, it's absurd that the progressives think that this is helping in any way. It's the best definition of insanity, frankly.
And I just want to add one more thing as well. Take a look in Toronto. If you happen to live in Toronto, you will know that the works, the public health City of Toronto department is on Ryerson University campus. So students who pay to go to university have to walk past a safe injection site, a site where they give out all of these safe supply drugs, as they're called. It's just constant destruction and havoc on campus. So the city thinks that that's appropriate. Suanne, you brought up the Parkdale shooting. There was a woman who worked at that facility who has now been charged because she helped to try and get the alleged killer away from the police. I mean, it's astonishing. These are, as you said, Andrew, crime magnets. And for somebody, some activist to be so racist and awful in front of that person who just wants to live in a community that is not infested with drugs says a lot.
Yeah, and I should say, of course, the activists won out in this case. The motion to consider implementing this site passed with a vote of 7-2. It was just two councillors who stood against it. Now, it's not a fait accompli just yet, but the way things are going, it certainly seems like that is likely to be the eventual outcome here. But speaking of unhinged protesters, let's talk about what happened at Mount Sinai Hospital. I shouldn't even be surprised anymore. Like, you think there are some sacred cows that remain in the context of political debate, but not when we are talking about the anti-Israel left. Take a look at this clip. I mean, 10 out of 10 on the climb, 8 out of 10 on the rhythm of the chant, 0 out of 10 on everything else. Sue-Ann, I'll just, you know, give you the floor on this one as our Torontonian and also a Jewish woman who's been on the front lines of this anti-Semitism stuff for years.
Yeah, you know, Andrew and Harrison, this goes back to the fact that the police and Toronto Mayor Olivia Chow didn't handle this well right out of the gate, and they enabled these people and empowered them to continue their protests. The last I spoke with the police, there were, I guess this makes it about 495 protests in Toronto by mostly the anti-Israel left radicals. I call them terrorists. Their tactics are intimidating, you know, to strike a Jewish hospital. Somehow they thought that related to Gaza and what's going on in the hospitals there, although that is all propaganda because the IDF never struck any hospitals, as that has been proven. But they just, many of them are people who are just totally indoctrinated, ignorant of the reality of what's going on, and they just get caught up in the craziness. I mean, they've found a purpose. I follow all of them on social media and I follow the leaders, and somehow they think that these protests are going to help in some way. I think they're all mentally unstable, frankly. And I think that the police, and they're now handling it much better, but you know, there were weeks and weeks, like almost 8 weeks of them not handling it well. And this has just encouraged this craziness. More charges should be laid. I mean, the person, when politicians give their platitudes and make their statements like Olivia Chow did and the others, like, you let this happen. I want to say, you let this happen. So it's rather, again, I'm going to use the word rich to be coming out and saying this. And Jews in my community are feeling very intimidated. To strike a Jewish hospital is outrageous.
You mentioned Olivia Chow. So she did eventually condemn this, and Justin Trudeau eventually did as well, and Doug Ford. And so they all eventually did, but it was notable how slow they were compared to if there had been, you know, an attack on a mosque. And we've seen this happen. But the way that the left responds to this, so Olivia Chow, who's been like a darling of the far left and the even farther left, for years, Olivia Chow puts out her condemnation on Twitter. I won't read the whole statement, but Nora, Real Communism Has Never Been Tried, Loretto, decides to respond this way. Let's put up her post on X. She says, Chow betrays everything it means to be progressive. Now, I leave that up, though, for a second, because Olivia Chow says a hospital is a sanctuary. Yesterday's actions were unacceptable. Targeting Jewish institutions is anti-Semitic. And hate has no place in our city. So when Nora says this betrays everything she means to be, everything it means to be progressive, she's saying the quiet part out loud, which is that what we saw in that video is what it means to be progressive. Right, Harrison?
Well, certainly. It's a mask off moment for Nora Loretto and for, I think, a lot of people who agree with her. To speak to the protesters' mental instability, as Sue-Ann noted, I can't think of a worse way to try and alienate Canadians from your cause than to protest like this in front of a hospital that has nothing to do with what these people are protesting about. Now, I think that there are some people who protest Israel who don't protest out of racism, and they have things that they want, they disagree with Israel on. But when you're protesting Mount Sinai Hospital to make the claim that that is purely anti-Israel, pro-Palestine, and not anti-Semitic, I have a hard time believing that. And you really can't. Good luck trying to sell that to the Canadian public as well, because I've seen these protests. I've been inside of these protests. I've interviewed these people. When you speak to them, they, of course, understand that they're trying to, you know, get their cause out to the public, and they want people to join their cause. But in that group mentality, it seems that they lose all sense of reality, and they're willing to push the boundaries all the way to blatant anti-Semitism. And of course, the consequence of that is alienating Canadians from your cause, whatever kind of Canadians were still perhaps willing to support these people, because they're just showing themselves to not actually care that much about what's going on. They care more about trying to make a statement about Israel, which of course is a statement about Jews. So it's just ridiculous.
It's a deep-rooted Jew hatred, and it started with targeting Café Landoir, Aroma, remember, at the beginning, and going in front of the Israeli consulate. Well, that's, you could make a sort of stretch it that is related to Israel, more so. But to target Jewish businesses, Indigo, the people who were charged with Indigo, didn't think they did anything wrong, even though they engaged in civil disobedience. All these actions were not targeting Israel. They were targeting Jews. Let's make it, pure and simple, frank statement. They were targeting Jews. When people write me on Twitter and say, you are a Zionist pig or you're an evil Zionist, they mean I'm an evil Jew. They're not talking about Israel. It has nothing to do with it.
And also,
and I think on that point, I believe that anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiments can be distinct. I believe they can be, but the Venn diagram is a lot more like a circle than these people tend to admit. And I think that when push comes to shove, the nuanced, reasoned, moderate, non-anti-Semitic critique of Israel is basically as elusive as, the Yeti in the wilderness of the Himalayas or something. Because 9 times out of 10, it's just trying to put lipstick on a very anti-Semitic pig.
Yeah, and they talk about, you're genocidal. You support genocide. This is the repeated comment I get. You're, Zionist. They use the word Zionist. They use the word Hasbro. And you, like you say, they're trying to put lipstick on what is really deep-seated anti-Semitism.
And as well, these protesters will say this is about human rights. This is about protecting Muslims who are being killed by Israel. But these protesters don't care about the Uyghurs in China. They don't speak up about other Muslims who are being killed by other Muslim countries. They speak up when it has to do with Israel. It's clear this has nothing to do with human rights, because they have lots to protest about if it was really just about human rights. It's not. It's about Israel. And as Sue Ann says, it's something much worse, much deeper.
We say in the Jewish community, if it's Jews, it's news.
Yeah, very, very well said. I when I was in Israel for the first time in 2011, I met an AP reporter there who said, and he spoke Hebrew as he was Jewish, and that was how he got the job being posted there when he was quite young. And he said, like, people at AP bureaus around the world are lucky if their stories ever get picked up, where he said for him, it was like, if someone sneezes in Jerusalem, he could write a story and it's going to get picked up everywhere. So I think there's some empirical evidence behind what you just said there, Sue Ann. Just to end things, I mean, I know it's a bit of a sour note as we head into the weekend here, but Harrison, why don't you tell us what happened in Regina last weekend, and more importantly, what happened in Ottawa in the days following?
Yes, of course. Well, as Canadians who've been following this story will know, Canada was rapidly approaching the grim 100 number of churches that have been targeted by arsonists and vandals since 2021. We've now since passed that. We are now at 100 churches that have been targeted in this country. And on Saturday, or on Friday midnight rather, the Blessed Sacrament Parish in Regina was targeted by an arsonist who was caught on camera dumping the contents of a jerry can onto the rear entrance of this 118-year-old Catholic church, the oldest Catholic church in Regina, lighting it on fire and running away. Thank God the church was saved by firefighters. But this is, we're now at 100 churches, which is an awful thing to have happened in this country. It's a blight on the government and the state of our country itself. Now, here's where it gets even worse. You might think that condemning an attempted arson of a church might be the easiest thing to do. It might be the easiest no-brainer thing to say, yes, I condemn the burning of a church. But according to the NDP and the Liberals, well, that was just not going to fly. Take a look at what happened when a Saskatchewan MP, Corey Tachor, I think I said his name right, he got up in the House of Commons on Monday and sought a unanimous consent motion to condemn the attempted arson at the Blessed Sacrament Parish. Take a look at this clip.
The Honourable Member from Saskatoon University.
Yes, there was another attempted arson at a church on the weekend, Mr. Speaker. And if you seek unanimous consent, you will find...
I hear that there is no unanimous consent. All right. It being 3:20, the House will now proceed to the taking of deferred recorded division.
So no unanimous consent to condemn the burning of that church. They did it again, however, guys. The left in Canada's parliament did it again when Andrew Scheer got up seeking the same motion. They let him speak for a little bit longer before cutting him off. But take a look, they did it twice, this time to Andrew Scheer.
I recognize the Honourable Member, a former chair, a current House officer, the member from Regina Capel, who is rising on his feet for a point of order.
Mr. Speaker, Blessed Sacrament Church in Regina was subject to arson and vandalism, and I believe you'll find support that the House recognized the right of Canadians to gather to worship or celebrate their faith.
So I regret to interrupt the Honourable Member from Regina Capel, but I could clearly see that there is no unanimous consent for this.
Absolutely disgusting. What kind of people, Andrew, can't bring themselves to condemn the burning of a church?
It's like the lowest hanging fruit. Like, it's not even hanging. It's fruit on the ground. You can just kind of walk by and just sort of pick it up and say, oh, wow, here you go. But like, you know, and it's one thing because I do believe that the anti-Semitism issues we've been discussing are very real. It's not an either or. You can condemn anti-Semitism. You can condemn attacks against Christians. But again, Sue Ann, it's one group that tends to get a pass here.
You know, it just to me speaks to the breakdown of the moral fabric in our country that they can't even condemn something like this in a church. You know, perhaps these lefty progressives, they don't like the police, they don't like religion, you know, and here we have drug addicts running wild and running rampant on our streets in major cities. I mean, it's sad to say that Trudeau's Canada, I mean, in the last 8 years, I mean, the decline in this country is real, and it's very disheartening.
There's a lot of symbolism going on, right, with these motions. And I think Christians who are watching this will have to struggle with the idea of it, that if these MPs can't condemn the burning of a church, what does it say about how they think about Christians in this country? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are going to be left to with that question in their heads. Now, it's also important to remember this same parliament voted unanimously to condemn Canada of committing genocide. Mm-hmm. Against First Nations people. So they could all agree on that. They could all agree that Canada committed genocide, but they can't agree to condemn the burning of a church. What do you think the reaction would be if not 100 mosques, but one mosque had been the target of an attempted arson? It would be bedlam in the House of Commons. Everybody would be freaking out over it, and rightly so, I should say.
But and Trudeau would have been on a plane there. He would have been there within hours. And that this is the thing that's happened. I mean, when there was that debunked, I mean, you would remember this, Sue Ann, because it happened in Toronto. There was that debunked hijab hoax where a young schoolgirl had basically falsified a claim that her hijab was ripped off. And this was like, you know, Trudeau was condemning it. And then when Toronto police said, yeah, okay, this never happened. But therein lies the problem. Here we have video evidence. I don't think we need to play it, but video evidence of this arson attempt, of police saying it. And there you go. You can see the screen grab of it there. And it is slow, slow. And to be honest, I still don't think Trudeau has said anything about it. I know a couple of Liberal MPs have, one of them, Anthony Housefather, who's been quite strong on these sorts of issues, but nowhere near the condemnation. Like you said, Harrison, if this had been it at another type of institution, which would also have been wrong.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough.
Well,
all right.
Yes, well, I was going to jump in there, but you know.
No, I was just going to say that I think Trudeau at this point is just dialing it in. I don't think he's really running this country anymore. He's lost. He'd rather jet off somewhere. I mean, it's. I actually enjoy the interplay between the people running for president down here, because at least they seem to be passionate about what's going on, the border issues and all that kind of stuff. I don't get that feeling from any of the people in the Liberal Party, and particularly Trudeau.
If that's the case, and Trudeau is really phoning it in and he's basically done, what a way to bookend his time as prime minister in this country. 100 churches attacked under his watch. What I can't think of better symbolism, quite frankly, to encapsulate Trudeau's time as prime minister of this country.
Yeah. Very, very well said. Well, that is all that we had, but I do want to give some comments, because we said we were going to, well, I don't know if we told you we were going to. We said internally we were going to. A couple of comments from last week's show here. Be Still and Know 2999, possibly not a legal name, says, love the off-the-record format. Yes, Andrew, it's endearing as opposed to highly unprofessional. You guys are a great trio. Well, it's not, as this show demonstrates, going to be the same group of us every show. We do this like cutthroat fight to the death, and at the end, we'll be left with only three left. So we ditched Candace. We threw her overboard. We brought Sue Ann in. Maybe next week, I'm the one who is thrown overboard. We have a question. So we were talking a little bit about inflation and grocery store stuff last week. And we were also talking about Trudeau claiming that Pierre Poilievre wanted to make Canada great again. Doug Patterson says we should actually just make groceries affordable again. I don't know. What do you think? Should we see that? Should we trademark that one?
That's a good one. I think part of making Canada great again would be making groceries affordable, would be making life affordable. So they work together. But, you know, make Canada great again and make groceries affordable again. The acronym doesn't sound as good as MAGA.
Yeah, MAGA is doesn't roll off the tongue. You're in MAGA territory down there in Florida, Sue Ann, right?
Yes. The groceries are still pretty expensive here. I mean, I think it's part of a giant trend. And let's not forget the fuel, gas as well.
Oh, when I was in Davos with Sean Thompson and Cosmin Jurja from our team a few weeks ago, reporting, we were not like Klaus Schwab's, you know, invited elites. We had a rental car and we were driving around. I never thought I could have a gas bill that would make me long for the gas prices in Canada. That's how bad it is. So, I mean, the one saving grace is that in Europe, like, we had this van and I forget how much it was. Like, with the exchange rate, it was something like, you know, $200 to fill up the tank. It was insane. And we were driving back and forth a whole bunch. We'll do one more comment here. We have one. Who is this here? This is from Woodjigges. You guys got to work on your YouTube screen handles, by the way. It's regarding Harrison's rental story. The rules are being broken with these illegal rentals. You have to provide a secondary means of egress because of fire. That window in the basement doesn't look like it would cut it. City bylaw and fire department should get on this. Are they, Harrison, or has this just sort of been a thing where they're all just letting it go?
Well, I think if these landlords were interested in following the rules, we wouldn't see these listings in the first place. We've long since passed, you know, rules governing how these landlords are going to operate. These slumlords don't care much about the rules. It's a bit of a nightmare spot, that basement apartment to be in. And I mean, of course it's against the rules, obviously.
All right. Well, that does it for us. My thanks to you, Sue Ann Levy, and you, Harrison Faulkner, and all of you who tuned in for listening to this program. Just a reminder, everything you've heard in the last however long we've been doing this was off the record. Now you get to jump in the pool, Sue Ann.
Not quite. I got to have my lunch first. But
we just do lunch in the pool. Do like a swim up bar.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. That was so much fun. Sorry about the mic issues.
Stuck to the tea, Andrew, this time, I see.
It's my morning coffee still.
Yeah. I don't have anything good to add to that side. I'm teetotaling it, so I'm doing the Diefenbaker teetotal. So I've just
I like it. Yeah, you're a lucid and sound mind whenever we do this show.
Sober second thought.
Oh, there we go. That's the second name of the show. If we rebrand it, sober second thought.
Second thought. Yeah.
Yeah.